You're listening to the Podcastle. Follow us on X at @the_podcastle. I'm a huge fan of today's guest. Welcome to the program, Dr. Israel Swan. You may have seen Dr. Swan on season 9 of Dr. K's Exotic Animal ER on National Geographic Wild, where his passion for medicine and compassion for his patients is super evident. Outside of clinical practice, Dr. Swan has volunteered his skills to assist with trap, neuter, and release programs designed to control feral cat overpopulations to provide better lives for individuals, as well as populations of both felines and native wildlife that are affected. In addition to veterinary medicine, Dr. Swan is also very passionate about working towards zoological and species conservation, as well as environmental habitat preservation. Now residing on the West Coast, he has returned to California and joined the Tarzana Pet Clinic team to continue his work with domestic and exotic animal species, as well as to contribute his skills towards conservation, rehabilitation, and preservation efforts. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Israel Swan. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for coming on. I've been really excited for this for a long time and excited to have you on. So much appreciated for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure to be here.
Well, tell the world, like, how, what made you, when did you get like the call that you wanted to be a doctor? Like, what, when did you decide this in your life?
So that's a great question. You know, I don't, you know, some people say they always knew from the time they were tiny exactly what they wanted to do. And I wouldn't say that was the case for me, but I will say even as a really little kid, I was always super interested in medicine and science, and I thought it was really, really cool, like just science and biology and all that stuff. And then I always had just had a huge passion for animals. I mean, that was the other thing too. So I wouldn't say as a little kid, I was like, I'm going to be a vet, but I knew I loved medicine and I knew I loved science. And I knew I loved animals. So it was a good mix for me. And as I kind of got older, I was like, yeah, you know what, that they all fit together really well in that career. And that's what really drew me toward the field.
It's pretty amazing, your story, because I read on the website that you don't just work with animals at a location, which in itself would be enough for most people. That's pretty incredible on its own. But you also work with you're fear-free certified. This is fascinating to me. Can you tell us what that is?
Absolutely. So that's kind of a movement in veterinary medicine to going more towards having animals have a really good experience with how we're working with them. So, you know, we don't want to rush them or stress them out. We do techniques that are more calming. We take more time and allow them to kind of be interacting with us. We're not doing stuff to them. We're doing stuff with them. So you want to make as low stress as possible. And if they are really stressed, potentially, you know, stopping the exam or stopping the procedure and figuring out ways we can do this without making them have a stressful experience. And that can be from all kinds of things like playing music. They have a lot of studies that show that really help cats to be calm, or, you know, like I said, using a lot of treats. And for the really stressed out ones, maybe have them come back with a little sedation so they're a little less stressed out. But it really is a matter of having this as fear-free as possible for the pets.
Which is huge. That's such a big deal, you know, and important for them when they, for that experience, you know? So I think that's cool. And I wasn't familiar with that. So when I did a little dive into it, that's pretty fascinating.
It came out, you know, really was a movement that started maybe about 10 years ago in vet med, but it definitely is, you know, a big kind of growing part of it is really having these to be a good experience, not like just a medical in out, get done with stressed out animals, to have it be as positive experience as possible. And that makes it more positive for their owners and everybody else too, right? So you don't want your animal to be stressed out, neither do we.
Right. No way. So you are on season 9 of Dr. K's Exotic Animal ER,
yes,
which I watched, you know, several times, but specifically that season. Tell us, what was your experience, you know, on the show? Because it says, she says when she introduces you, he's from, you know, coming from California and he's joining us. That was in Florida, that filming?
Southern Florida, exactly. Yeah, Southern Florida. Yep.
So how was the experience on there? Like, was it like a 24/7 thing you were working? Like, how did that all play out?
Well, it was definitely very, very busy. It was good. It was a very good experience, to be honest. It was, kind of get there. We're not putting on a show per se. We're really practicing medicine. So it wasn't a matter of like faking cases or fake. These are all real clients and real cases that were coming in. So it was, it was, for me, it was a big change, obviously, because I was, originally from Texas, but I was living in California, and then moved over to Florida, was working, had a little bit of exotic animal experience, companion animal experience before I went there, but that was really, mainly it was dog, cat, and a small amount of exotics. And I get there, and it's like really jumping into all kinds of exotic animals and zoo species and all kinds of stuff. So it was a learning experience for me. And then you're doing it in front of the cameras, right? So everything is like, it's a lot. I always get a lot of pressure. It was fun. But yeah, it's long days. Like veterinary medicine is just long days anyway. So you're there long days. And then kind of at the end of the day, you may have to answer more questions from the producers or kind of things they're working for the each different episode that may make the day a little bit longer. But like I said, all in all, it was a very good experience. And I was very grateful to be a part of it.
There's a quote you say on there. This made my eyes itchy. If you go where I'm following me, where you said you had a guinea pig named Clementine, and you were driving him around like all night, and you couldn't find a vet, and this made you want to become a vet to like save the Clementines of the world, because you couldn't find help for your pet. That is the most moving, saddest thing I've ever heard. It's like I picture you driving around, and you're like, it's urgent. You know, you're trying to save this guy, and then you just like couldn't find a vet kind of thing.
Well, so it was like, that was really fun. I was already getting into vet med. I was already in vet med, not a veterinarian, but I was in vet med as an assistant at that time. But it really was, what made me really want to focus on exotic animal medicine, because there was only about 1 in 10 veterinarians actually have any knowledge about exotic animals at all, that beyond dog and cat. And they say about 1 in 25 is actually pretty good at it. So I had Clementine. She was a little baby guinea pig, very sweet. Got her, and she was just developed an upper respiratory infection, but she was really young, so she was just not doing well. We went to multiple call different places, and no one had any experience. Like, we just don't see guinea pigs, so we're just trying to find place after place after place to see her. Did finally find a vet who said, I don't really do a lot, but I can try to help. And unfortunately, she didn't make it. She did pass away. When that happened, it was tough. But when that happened, I said, when I'm a vet, I want to be able to help everybody who needs help. Like, that was really important to me to say, yes, dog and cat, but all the animals that need help. So learn as much as I can to help as many as I'm able to.
That's amazing. That's such a great credo. I have snakes. I've had snakes since I was 7. I love them. I have ball pythons. And 10 years ago,
ball pythons are awesome.
They're like, they're so cuddly and cool. And,
they are. They really are.
They're just cool. They're cool. They're such cool animals. They have personalities. And as you know, and 10 years ago, Adam had an accident. He got in the fridge and he sliced his neck. It was very bad. And I have a similar experience. I'm driving around and I finally found the one vet. This is 10 years ago. Like, the one vet that specialized in exotics just happened to be at a spot close to me that night. And I felt like God, like the stars aligned, because if like I didn't find someone that could help him, like he had to get surgery, and I fainted on the floor in there. Like, I've never fainted in my life. Oof. And I like fainted on the vet floor. It was like embarrassing. Like, I was just so scared.
Absolutely.
Stressful. And I feel like so that's like why I have so much respect for you and what you do. It's, you're not just dealing with like, you're not like a pediatrician that's like, here's some cold medicine. You're dealing with somebody's baby that can't talk to you and say like, well, here's what's wrong. So you have to find out what's wrong with them. Usually, or a lot of times, I'll let you speak to this, in a time sensitive situation, you can't be like, bring him back next week and we'll take a look. Like, if there's an emergency, it's up to you to find out what's happening to somebody's baby and like fix that. And they can't talk to you. That's like the scariest thing to me.
It's no pressure whatsoever. No, I will tell you.
How do you deal with that? Like, I got so much respect to be able to do that, really.
So, it's funny because I remember a long, long time ago, many, many moons, but when I first started stepping into veterinary medicine, I was told veterinary medicine is like kind of like being a detective, because in human medicine, you're right. People can say like, my stomach hurts or my head hurts or I don't feel well, and they can kind of describe their symptoms to you. In veterinary medicine, most of you just know they do, you could their animal's acting abnormal. It's like, you're right, they can't tell you what's wrong. So it really is like a detective saying, what is most likely going on based on the things they're describing? But you're really, yes, you have a, you get enough experience and enough medical knowledge to say it's most likely going to be this, and this is at least a way to go. But also, it's like, you know, sometimes you can have multiple diseases can have or illnesses can have the same signs. So you can't say they're doing this, so it's this. You know what I'm saying? That's why we got to kind of think about what is likely going on. And this is the kind of testing, because you're right, a lot of this is time sensitive, especially in the ER. And I've done a lot of ER medicine as well in the emergency room. Like, you have to be able to think quick and say, this, we got to figure this out fast, because sometimes it is an upper respiratory infection, like a cold, but sometimes it's something really serious. So you have to think fast and be able to come up with a reasonable and plan to actually like find the answers. And then once you have those answers, what do you do with that information, right? Now you have to be able to create a plan that's actually going to help this patient improve, hopefully.
And you love doing this too, from my experience. It seems like you love your work.
I do. I really do love it. Like, to me, it is not a career for everybody. It can be stressful. It can be definitely have really long days, and especially on, you know, emergency work, but even in general practice, there are days you have really high case volume, a lot of patients you're trying to see, and you're trying to fit in the same day appointments with the patients that are ill. And, you know, so it can be stressful, but I do love it. I think it is the best career in the world. I wouldn't want to do anything else. I'm very, very passionate about veterinary medicine and on the side of helping the animals and also helping the people, because I am that person that the pets are my kids. Like, my dog is my child.
I want
to give the same love and care that I would want for her to all of my patients. Like, that's very, very important to me. So it can be pressure, because I know how much people care about their pets. They are like their family. They are not like family. They are family. So,
right. Oh yeah. You know, yeah. Like my cat who you've seen is my, I'm her dad. She's my daughter, you know?
Oh, and you totally are her dad.
And,
for sure.
Helicopter parent. And, you're so good at what you do. And I feel like the fact that you have a baby yourself, it would be like if LeBron James's kid wanted like basketball, like who better to have around? Cause if there's like the slightest thing you're there that could go wrong, or somebody doesn't feel well, like, you know, like you're in house 24/7. Like, I feel like Mare is her name, right? Be like 50, like the oldest dog on record, because there's like round the clock great care from you. You know, like,
well, that's always the plan.
Yeah.
I always say that the downside of being a pup to a veterinarian or a cat or any animal is that we're always there looking at you. So you sneeze funny and we're poking and prodding. What's wrong with you? So they're like, not again, Dad. It's fine. But so, yes, we notice, we try to catch things really fast, especially with our own. We know the things to look for. But also, I'm sure for them, it's a little bit like, all right, give it a rest, Dad. It's fine.
Give it a rest.
Give it a rest.
I wanted to ask you a question. So speaking of, animal ER and even general practice, you know, there's a lot going on. Everything's a priority, of course. What percentage of your patients come in? Like, do most of the people that come in, it's because something's wrong, or do people come in just for checkups for their pets? And like, do you recommend that? Like, I feel like a lot of people just come in when there's something wrong. Like, am I wrong about that, or what's like the deal?
No, that's a really good question. And there's kind of a divided answer on that. In that, it depends on what type of setting you're in. So if you're in a general practice only versus an ER only versus a mixed practice, then they're all different answers. So people are going to go into, when you're emergency strictly, people are coming in for emergencies. They're not going to their GPs, or they're at the GP and then they get referred over to emergency, and that's where you are. So that one, all those patients coming in are going to be sick, because they're like us going to emergency room versus going to our regular physician. Most GPs, and that's where I'm at right now, is a combination of the two. So we're certainly not an emergency room. If something is really emergent, like life and death, then we refer them over to the emergency hospitals, because they have the setup and they have all the, you know, the 24-hour capabilities that's what they should have. But for general practice, you know, we're a mix of urgent. We do a lot of urgent care. So that's not really emergency, but urgent as far as, you know, vomiting, diarrhea, ear infections, skin infections, lacerations, and that kind of stuff that we can treat without having to send you to the ER. And then we have a lot of wellness appointments too, but you're very correct on what you're talking about as far as general preventative care. It's really important. It's very, a lot of people do go when there's a problem, but it's like what we do recommend, highly recommend, is at least a once a year annual wellness visit. When things aren't bad, you're like, they're healthy. We just want to keep checking them year after year, making sure we're the ones who are going to catch things early. And what we want to catch is it before it becomes an emergency where they're really sick, right? So maybe we catch things early on and say, hey, something's a little off here. And that's, we do that by, you know, just our physical exam. And if our older pets, we say younger pets once a year, when they're older about twice a year, and biannual exam, just so we can kind of catch changes early. And we recommend doing like baseline blood work and then yearly blood work, so we can catch those little changes early on. Like, is there a little change on the kidneys? Is there a little change on the liver? You know, white blood cells, red blood cells, things that we catch very early stage that we can do something about it before they're really, really ill. And now it's like, well, we don't know how long this is going on, and now they're very sick. So you're right. Preventative care is really important, and we want to do preventative care to prevent those emergency room visits.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like that's so important. Thank you for saying that, because I don't know. I feel like if I were a vet and people came in and they're like, well, this is happening, and you're like, well, you have never brought this animal in her life, and we would have picked up on this like 5 years ago, but because you waited, like, it's terminal. Like, what do you expect? It's like a car. I mean, not that's a terrible analogy, but it's like, if you don't do checkups or whatever on your body, you're going to pick up on things that you could avoid, and you're going to learn like, oh, hey, there's like a low count here, we should change this diet. I don't know. I feel like that's so important that people do the wellness checks, as you call them.
It is. It really, you know? Really, truly, it is important. And the thing is, like, we're here to help, right? And the best way we can help you is by saying we are really monitoring this. And we have tons of great owners who really do that. We have lots of owners who do come every year or every 6 months, and they're really on top of it. So, I mean, that is very, very important too. You're right. Like, that's how we prevent disease. So we don't want to just cure the disease when that time happens. We're trying to prevent them from in the first place. And that's preventative care is more than just reactive care.
That's why, that's one of the examples you would get, like a baseline blood test for your pet, which I did recently.
With your,
and it was like a good thing, because you do that every year or whatever, and then you're like, okay, we know what's changed and where we need to go.
Right, exactly. And hopefully we check it and everything looks great. But we say, hey, now we do see some slight changes. Or another thing kind of we talked about, say you have a good baseline, and then 6 months later, your dog or cat or animal was vomiting and sick. And they were like, then now we know where they were. So you, like I said, what did change in the last 6 months? And say maybe 6 months ago, the kidneys were great, but now we see a sudden change. So is this an acute, very intense, very sudden insult to the kidneys, or is this something that was chronic? Well, we know that by looking at kind of blood work changes throughout the years.
And which is so like good to do, because if there's no other way you would know that, right? I mean, if you don't have a blood test, that's kind of like the mapping system for the animal and everything that's moving in there, kidneys, like everything, right?
Yeah, a blood test, and when we do like sometimes we do abdominal or thoracic surveys, like x-rays of its chest and abdomen to make sure we don't see anything starting. But you're right. It's like, we actually don't, if people come in and say, I want you to tell me it's wrong, but I don't want you to do any testing. And it's like, well, then we don't have crystal balls, right?
Yeah.
What we do, the way we are able to tell you is by doing this testing. We do these tests and we can find answers and then help you. But you're right. Like that is how we find the answer, because they can't, you know, your cat or dog or bird or snake or anything can't say, my leg hurts or my stomach hurts, or I'm, you know, they can't tell us what's wrong with them. So we have to like use, like I said earlier, as a detective, part of your clues are your diagnostic testing. Like, this is how we find the answers, by doing this testing to find out what's wrong.
Right. Yeah. You have to map that out. And I feel, so I have a lot of pets. You know, I have snakes, birds, cats, 5 alligators. Just kidding. I don't have any cats. But, no, I'm kidding. But, so I, you know, I go to the vet a lot, and I feel like, people are pretty good with understanding there's going to be curveballs and things thrown to them. But do you see, I guess a better question is there like a particular animal that you see that is like more difficult than others, or harder to diagnose, or more problematic? Like, or is that too, like, general of a question?
No, it's not. There are certain species that definitely are more, I'll give you some examples. Yeah, certain species are a lot more delicate than other species, so they do have a lot more issues. I would say that does lean more toward exotic type more than dog and cat, but birds definitely. So a lot of our exotic species are prey species, meaning they have to hide illness. And so in nature, if you're sick, then you appear sick, then you're going to be eaten, right? So they yeah. want to look as healthy as possible, and they'll hide their illness until they're really, really, really sick. By the time you see them being ill, you say, hey, yeah, there's a problem. So I see rabbits definitely are ones that do that. I've worked on a lot of rabbits in Florida. And, you know, oftentimes by the time you see that they're sick, they're really sick because they've been hiding it. So, and I can see that with birds, definitely with reptiles too, like chameleons. They're very, especially with reptiles, they have such slow metabolic systems that, you know, they get sick slowly and they take a long time to recover. But yeah, definitely exotic species, you're going to say they do tend to be a little more sensitive and tend to get sick quicker and get really sick fast. So that's why you have to really be watching those things too.
And they hide it for, you know, like evolutionary
reasons. As long as they can. Yeah.
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 So rabbits can be a difficult one for hiding their
rabbits
illnesses.
And birds, I would say too. Birds too. Like by the time you see them kind of puffed up and not feeling well, like they're probably feeling a lot worse than you realize they are. So rabbits, guinea pigs, all those, which I love guinea pigs. Everyone who knows me knows I'm a guinea pig fanatic.
Oh yeah.
I love my piggies. So they definitely like they're stop eating. There's a problem. They should be always eating. So like there are things that you gotta get on really fast with them.
Because they're very active. And playful usually.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, so Dr. K's exotic animal ER, which the show's fantastic. She was great to watch, but I could watch you all day on that show. Would you ever do, if you were approached like another show, was that enough for you? Like, I feel like if you had your own show, people would watch that like all day. It would be great.
I would hope so. You know, I'm very open to future opportunities. Yeah. I mean, I definitely kind of going along with the flow of things, but yes, I think it was a very good experience. I definitely really did enjoy it. And what I really enjoy about it is, you know, you're putting out information that educates people to pet owners. And I think that's a really good platform to be able to do that. So yeah, I'm very open to, you know, whatever possibilities were to come along, as long as it's the right fit, you know, and it's something that's worthwhile doing. Yeah. I would be open to that.
Yeah. Yeah. See, question now on non-animal related. When you're not saving the world, what do you do? What's like one of your favorite like things to do to outside of work?
I love. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good question because as you know, Beth spent a lot of time at work. So,
yeah.
You know, when we're away from work and our work is very intensive, but I'm very, very much into fitness, going to the gym, but my happy place is being outdoors, whether it's hiking. I take my dog everywhere with me. We go hiking up in Northern California as much as we can or to the beach. So we're very outdoorsy. You know, that's kind of what we do. A lot of going for day hikes and spending time, like I say, even if it's after work, just catching the sunset at the beach before the sun goes down. That's my happy place is being outside in nature.
Yeah. And you're pretty jacked up. You said you're like a good looking thinking man's Vin Diesel. If people don't know what you look like, you look like you could hurt somebody if a fight breaks out, I'm on your side is all I'm going to say.
I appreciate that. I'm a pretty nice guy though, but yeah,
you're a really nice
that.
Guy. Did you, you're like, you go out, you do hikes and everything like that, which is, you're like in touch with nature here in California, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a few months ago, I was able to take a few days to go up to Yosemite, which, believe it or not, I had never been to. Absolutely stunningly gorgeous up there. I would definitely make numerous trips. I took Mayor and we went in 3 days. We hiked 47 and a half miles.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were going from morning to night, but we saw so many beautiful, beautiful areas up there. And, you know, you certainly have great, great tourist points that you can take the bus to, which we did not know. When I did find that, it's like, we got on these trails and we're hiking up to the point that you don't see another person for hours because most people are taking the bus. But if you're able to do it, and not everyone can hike up, you know, 45 miles of trails. I get that. But if you're able to, it's like so beautiful and so much to see. And it was very refreshing for the soul. And that totally just puts my soul completely at rest. And that's good. It was
you
really
do need
good.
That
I highly
soul
recommend
reset.
Yosemite.
Yeah.
You do.
That's like 15 miles a day, pretty much. That's
very
ambitious.
That's what we did, pretty much.
You're a good man. Wow.
Well, I will say for me, it didn't really feel that long because you're so beautiful. You're just caught up in how pretty it is. And then before you know it, it's like, oh, yeah, we walked a lot today or hiked a lot today. But
I would love to
like
do that.
On a mission to do it. It just felt natural and easy to do.
I feel like if I did that, you would see rescue helicopters circling like half an hour later. And then I would be that idiot that's like, Tarzana man lost in Yosemite. Search costing up to 400,000. You know, like that.
Well,
that
you have to respect nature for sure.
You do. No, you do. I'm kidding. It's fantastic. I know I've taken enough of your time, but I just have one more question for you, if I may. What's next for you? Do you have any plans for like any projects in the future? Like, are you just seeing what's out there right now? Like, what's next for the great Dr. Swan?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, I'm very very fluid. I try not to have blinders on with anything and be very open to different possibilities as to what's next. I am very, very passionate about environmental conservation and about species and wildlife protection and conservation. I think that's really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
These habitats are being wiped out and all these species that we're losing. I think that's something that we really need to be addressed. And I know that's easier said than done, but I am very, very kind of looking around at different things that potentially could happen with that. Just like I said, keeping opportunities open. So you never know. I guess we'll see if I have something to say soon. But right now, if everything's good, yeah, you never know. Like I said, but it really is. I think that is the next part of my kind of what I'm focusing on my career really is with like species conservation and that kind of stuff, because I think it's just so important.
You and me both. I feel like, sorry, that's not the last question. I lied. The zoological impact on species and their preservation. So I've worked at the Philadelphia Zoo before. That's where I'm from. I'm kind of split down the middle with zoos. So on one hand, I understand the importance of preservation and the successes they have had in, numbers of endangered species and kind of the, what they've done in terms of like preserving numbers. On the other hand, you feel bad because it's a zoo in some spots. Are you kind of on the same wavelength? Like, where do you feel about that kind of thing?
That's a good question. Like, I am kind of on the same wavelength. So yes, I think that it's kind of a jumbled mixed bag, right? It's like there are some zoos that really do a fantastic, fantastic job. Like I do think that some animals in the zoos are there with, you have breeding programs to help kind of extend the species, and they have husbandry and they have enrichment things set up the correct way. So I think there are some zoos that are run very, very well. And they are important because those zoos do a lot of work with conservation and species conservation and raising money and funds and that kind of stuff for species conservation. So that's great. There certainly are some zoos that are not run well at all. And they are, like you kind of said, animals behind bars. And mm-hmm. I think if it's done correctly, and the same with aquariums, like I'm the consulting vet for the Roundhouse Aquarium in Manhattan Beach. And I think that like if it's done correctly, I love it. The aquarium is very cool. But if it's done right, and you have a mission purpose behind what you're doing, then I think it's a valuable thing. But I absolutely think that there are certain zoos and aquariums and other, especially like roadside zoos and that kind of stuff that are terrible.
Yeah.
So it is really a matter of making sure that if it's done, being done for a reason and being done appropriately.
That's awesome. That's a great answer too. And that's cool that you're consulting the aquarium down in, is it Redondo Beach?
Manhattan Beach.
Manhattan.
Yeah, it's a great little aquarium. It's a little teaching aquarium. We're very big on education and conservation teaching, and it's a great little place. I highly recommend anyone has a chance to check it out. It's a neat place.
Oh, I'll check it out. Yeah, we usually go to the Long Beach, the Aquarium of the Pacific. We're like members there.
Yeah, so I've been there too. That's great.
Yeah, it's fun.
We're not as big and fancy as the Aquarium of the Pacific, but we're there.
No, that's awesome. And, you know, that's one thing I do appreciate about, you know, good zoos and aquariums is you are showing a part of the world and education, especially you always see a lot of children there at a young age that will cultivate that. Like as a kid, I went to the zoo like once a week with my parents. They like took me to the Philadelphia Zoo and, you know, and that I think as a kid helped me grow up and love animals and want to do more and learn about them. So it is important for that in that regard as well.
Absolutely.
But I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on. I'm sorry the video didn't work, but at least we got to hear your voice, Dr. Swan.
No worries at all. I appreciate you having me on. Yeah, it was definitely good to talk to you for sure. And I'm glad to talk to everybody about what I love, which is veterinary medicine and conservation. So that's good.
You are great. Well, thank you so much. Check out Dr. Swan on Instagram and on Dr. K, and visit Tarzana Pet Clinic. And I hope to see you again, Dr. Swan. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Have a great day.
You too.